The Joyful Friar podcast is made possible by the generous support of our friends. To support the podcast, please visit nathan-castle.com and donate today.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Joyful Friar podcast. I'm Father Nathan Castle, your host. This episode is the third of a three-part trilogy about the story of not-so-simple Simon the Savant that's in my third Afterlife Interrupted book. If you didn't see the previous two episodes, you might want to circle back and learn about the basic story of Simon. And then last week's episode had to do with a compassionate response to what his story might evoke in people that hear it. Today, it'll be about spiritual practice, something from the story of Simon that might inspire us to pursue a particular path spiritually after hearing about him. If you recall, Simon was born on the autism spectrum. His dad left the family when that was discovered. It was up to his mom to raise him after that. Her name is Maylene, and she did a marvelous job for about 20 years when she was diagnosed with a cancer that killed her fairly quickly. So she was able to help Simon get through schooling, through his early years, and even get through college and into a career in a university-related lab doing research. In his childhood, other children teased him and called him Simple Simon, as in stupid or slow, because his autism caused him to have a different learning style. And he knew what it felt like to be insulted. He knew what it felt like to have something different about him that seemed in some way limiting. I don't know that he would have necessarily called it a disability, but in truth, it did limit ways in which he took in information and processed it. There's no question of that. His mother adapted to his learning style and tried to inspire in him the idea that he was as capable as other people. He just needed to do things in his own way. One of the things that he told us very plainly was that when he was in this earth body, he understood very discrete things like numbers, measurements. He didn't understand what he called subtleties, which were a lot of human interactions, any language that was not literal. He didn't like jokes at all, because very often jokes turn on some nuance of language that is funny. There were a lot of human interactions that when they weren't literal, he just felt left out and even a little fraudulent. He would try to laugh along to cover up the fact that he didn't really understand a thing. But he looked like, he felt like an outsider, an onlooker, someone not really fully a part. The career that he ended up in post-college was doing research in a lab, and the research was on creating exoskeletons, that is, wearable clothing that might one day be able to take people with spinal cord injuries who are paralyzed and be able to put on clothing that enables them to move about and walk. That, of course, would mean reconnecting signals from the brain that move through our musculature so that we can raise our hands or move our arms and legs. Anyway, he was doing that research. And if you are familiar with his story, he was alone in a lab because he preferred to be alone. But he was using his own body to introduce differing amounts of electricity, because it's electricity moving through muscle groups that enables us to move. So he was studying how electricity in different dosages moves and affects muscle groups. But he put in too much electricity to his body. He said he was paying attention to his hands and the movement of his hands and electrical impulses and how they affected movement of hands, but it stopped his heart. There was no one there to come to his assistance, and he died in the lab. Well, I think he was only about 23, maybe something like that, young adult. But then apparently in the afterlife, he kept wanting more math and science because that was his home turf. That's where he felt most comfortable. In the afterlife, he was told to that would be okay. There was plenty of new physics to learn because the physics is different after leaving the body. But his team of helpers told him that it was really advisable for him to recognize that he no longer had the limitations of his physical body. He was no longer on the autism spectrum. He was as capable as everyone else of taking part in activities that included what he had called subtleties. And he was encouraged to by his mother, who showed up for him to help him, to start exploring things that he otherwise would have stayed away from. In an earlier episode, I mentioned that he struggled to find the word simulator about a chamber that one could go into that's not really a plane where you might learn to fly one. And he said, "Did you know that they have them for restaurants?" He hated restaurants because he said they're really about eating food, literally. But people, when they go to restaurants, have all kind of opinions about the restaurant that are unrelated to food. And he just really didn't understand what they were talking about and would really just be left alone to eat food. So anyway, his mother helped him move through restaurant simulators and have new experiences unrelated to his autism, where he could then understand what other people experienced. And then he was broadened. He had a larger area of movement. He could do things he couldn't do before. Well, what I want to focus on in this spiritual practice is how a couple of things. One of them is how Simon analyzed what he did have. He didn't focus on what he did not have. He focused on what he did have and then got to work maximizing what he had. I, of course, am a Christian and a Catholic priest, and so my frame of reference is very often the Christian Gospels and the Jesus story. There are four Gospels, and they all can be read in one sitting. None of them are all that long, but out of the four Gospels, there's a story of a feeding miracle where Jesus takes a very little bit of food, almost an unnoticed amount of food, blesses it, and multiplies it so that it's now enough to feed thousands of people. He then enlists his own disciples to do the feeding. He doesn't just tell them all to get out of the way. He works with them to take what they had, to ask it to be blessed, and then it is dispersed, and people have seconds. They eat until they can't have it and need no more food. And then there's always the detail at the end of those stories about how he asked them to gather up everything so that nothing would be wasted, and then how many baskets it took to collect all the leftovers. Well, Simon didn't just collapse into some sort of disability thinking, some sense of what he could not do because of the way his mind worked. From early on, with the help of his mother, he worked to maximize what he was capable of doing, and he had capacities in math and science that were beyond what most neurotypical people could do. He turned his apparent scarcity into superabundance where math and science was concerned, and he found employment in a field that was that had a lot of math and science in it, but that math and science research was directed at helping people who also had some shortcoming, some disability, in this case, immobility of their arms or legs, something involving the spinal cord. So what he did is take his circumstance. He did apply himself to learning more and more math and science because it did come easier to him. And then he put that to a specific work that was compassionate, trying to help somebody else have a better life because of the way that he applied his gifts. I think of that. I don't know if you remember this story, but I grew up on a lot of European fairy tales that were still commonly told in the 50s and 60s. One of them was the story of Rumpelstiltskin. Do you remember that? It's some odd little character that convinced people that he could take straw and with a spinning wheel turn it into gold. Alchemy, taking something and turning it into something else in a way that seems mystical and magical. Well, that Simon could take his circumstance, and even though his life was short, make such good use of it and apply it so intelligently and compassionately is my thought process today. The kind of turning one thing into another, actively or just recognizing that in nature, sometimes things that appear to be of no use or even waste in nature can turn into something else. I was just teaching a group of people about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and I was saying that one of the things that I do sometimes when I feel toxins building up in my body or in my psyche, and when my thoughts begin to routinely move in a dark direction toward sadness or overwhelm, or some sense that I don't have enough energy or enough time or enough money, any kind of scarcity thinking. Sometimes when I feel that building up in me, I want it to leave. Well, how does anything leave the body? One way that toxic stuff leaves the body is through expiring, exhaling. Sometimes before I go to sleep, I'll ask the Lord, ask the Holy Spirit, the Holy Breath of God, to move through my body and find all the places where I've stored toxins. Do you know how your body breaks down under stress? Like, do you grind your teeth in the night when you're under stress? Do you get headaches, or do you have tension in the muscles of neck and shoulders? Sometimes you can feel like you have the weight of the world on your shoulders, and that's more than metaphysical or metaphorical. It sometimes the musculature of the neck and the head can end up with tension headaches. Another one can be the digestive tract. Sometimes you can upset your own digestion by worrying. Lower back pain, you get the picture. People, our bodies have different places where we might store toxins that aren't leaving. Well, one of the things I do is ask the Holy Spirit when I'm asleep. I'm going to be exhaling something like 5,000 to 7,000 times a night. Could you supercharge my body's ability to throw off toxins in an expiring breath and supercharge it? May I please have a double dose or a triple dose of cleansing in the night so that when I wake up in the morning, my cognition doesn't move in the direction of scarcity and sadness or tension. That's one thing. And then the other is that even that waste product that my body throws off, carbon dioxide, if I sit next to a green plant, I can hurl some of that at the plant and it loves it. That the green plant needs carbon dioxide the way we need oxygen. And it does the opposite. It's throwing off oxygen as a waste product. And then I can breathe in the oxygen that that plant just threw off. And so sometimes it might sound silly to you, but there's a physics behind it, a truth. I sometimes will sit next to a plant and bless it and say, "May I please have your oxygen? I'll trade you for my carbon dioxide." So what is waste to each of us ends up becoming a resource. Well, there's another one that comes to mind. And that would be whatever you want to call it. Number two, excrement, shit. When it's dispersed in the right ways, it becomes fertilizer. Part of my childhood was growing up on our family farm in Southwest Louisiana. And there was a job that was always there to be done. Well, there are a lot of jobs to be done on a farm, but around your house, you can always clean out a closet or organize a drawer or, we never dared say when I was growing up that there's nothing to do because my mom or dad would then immediately have us start cleaning the garage or something like that. So we never gave, we knew better than to say there's nothing to do. But one of the things that there was to do on a farm when there was no other immediate work was to drag the fields, because we had a herd of, at one point, about 100 cattle, and there's cow paddies all over the pasture. Well, they kill the grass where that cow paddy lies. But then it was something that, as a 10-year-old, I could do. I could ride the tractor, and you just attach this heavy metal series of poles. It was a homemade thing. Somebody welded this thing together. We just called it the drag. It was something that it might have been about 10 feet wide, and it was several parallel tubes of metal that you just dragged across the field, and then it would scatter all of this cow manure. So instead of the cow manure sitting in one spot and killing the grass beneath it, the drag dispersed it, and then the next rain would help it fertilize the ground, and there you go. Something that was waste is now an asset. It's feeding the next generation of grass, whatever was in that field. Well, I think of that sometimes, because I think that the Creator has built into creation ways in which something that seems like nothing but waste has a new application if it's used in the right way. So I admire the way that Simon took what looked like a life of scarcity and shortage and turned it around and made himself the servant of research that might make life better for other people. I wonder if there's a way that you can apply that in your own life. You might borrow that practice that I was mentioning about before going to sleep, asking the Holy Spirit to have your body rid of anything in your imagination that seems like crap, resentments of things that happened ages ago. Even if you have a good reason for feeling that pain, do you really want to have it in you? Could it leave? Would you be better without that thought, without the emotions that flow from it? You might be able to just start that practice and say, Lord, cleanse me, move through me in a way that that takes this series of emotions and thoughts that are in me, these stored memories, and drag them, disperse them so that they don't continue to thwart my happiness and my growth. Could some of it just leave? That'd be nice. Or could some of it somehow be re apportioned in a way that that somehow does some good? I'm talking about one's interior life. And then in general, can you look at your life, for example, if you're grieving the loss of a loved one, or if you've had some health setback or some financial setback or something that makes you feel less able than you were before, that you have fewer resources to work with because of some life event that has caused some setback? It's okay to acknowledge that and maybe even grieve it, but do you need to wallow in it? Can you say, yes, I'm naturally sad because of the loss of the loved one, or the health issue, or the whatever the sadness is. However, is it also possible for me to see this as an unlikely resource? Could I spin this straw into gold? Could I take what I have, even if I wish I didn't have it? Now that I do have it, can I turn this to the good? You don't need to do that by your own will, like by the powers vested in me as the king of the universe. I'm going to now overcome my grief or my sadness or whatnot all in one fell swoop. But it doesn't mean you can't start. Simon, if he had thought, I'm not going to bother with doing research on exoskeletons unless I'm sure I can help somebody walk. Well, researchers won't even try if they decide at the beginning that the only payoff would be to see the end result of their research. Sometimes we exist in something more like a bucket brigade or an assembly line or a relay race, something where you play your part and then turn it over to the next person. I'd recommend that. We don't always have to finish what we start. We can just make a good effort and leave the outcome for others and be satisfied that we did a good day's work. We worked hard on our farm, and I learned early the value of the kind of fatigue that comes after hard work. I'm living it right now because in recent weeks, I've worked uncommonly hard and I'm more tired than normal. But that doesn't mean I have to be exhausted and feel annoyed and, you know, ill-tempered or whatever. I don't want that. I'm grateful that I have the capacity to contribute and to do hard work. And when I have fatigue that follows it, I can say thank you for the hard work that made me feel tired, and then go to bed, then rest. So I think that's enough for now. I hope that you find this helpful. I want you to remember that I'm always praying for you, and I welcome your questions or comments. Although if you've stumbled upon this podcast and haven't read any of the books that any of the Afterlife Interrupted books and find this curious, please don't email me with questions of that about those books without having first simply read one. They're easily available on Amazon and they're not expensive. So if there's something that that I can do for you, that you can contact me through my website, which is nathan-castle.com. And I do try to be as prompt in replying as I'm able to be. That's it for right now. I'm grateful that you joined me for this episode of The Joyful Friar. I'm Father Nathan, your host, wishing you well and reminding you that you're in my prayers. Bye now.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Joyful Friar. Please like, follow, and subscribe. You can visit me at nathan-castle.com. Send me a message by clicking the contact button. God bless.